20.
I've been busy too.
We have invited testimony. First of all, we have some distinguished visitors in the audience. We have former Representative Hector McPherson and his wife. Welcome. I see you brought your rotten son with you. We appreciate that. What I thought I would do very briefly is just give a very brief overview of the Oregon Retirement Plan, and then we'll have testimony from the state treasurer, from Margaret Halleck from the governor's office, and I'll have Representative McPherson come up at the same time. And then we will have representation from the PERS Coalition, and last and least, Jim Green and Mike Salzgeber. So I just want to make a couple of comments. This, as the bill came over to us, was a defined contribution plan. We have changed that and produced a hybrid plan for new employees called the Oregon Retirement Plan, and it'll be for new employees after the date of enactment. I just want to make a couple of comments about the distinction of what a hybrid plan looks like. We felt that we were given two tasks in this. One was to share the risk between the employee and the employer, unlike the current PERS system in which the account increases or cost increases for rates were borne by the employer, and obviously to keep costs down. And I will reflect on that as we go through. That's crazy, huh? So with regard to vesting, it's the same as PERS. It's 100% at 5 years of service. Employer participant, and this is the, this is the defined benefit side of this, and I will discuss the defined contribution in just a moment. The benefit formula has been changed. Basically, the bells and whistles have been moved out of the current PERS plan. The benefit formula has been reduced from 1.67 to 1.5 for general service, and from 2% to 1.8% for police and fire. The retirement ages have changed. Now the retirement ages under our proposal would be general service at age 58 with 30 years of service, or age 65, and for police and fire it would be age 53 and 25 years of service, or age 60. COLA would be the lesser of CPI or 2%. The benefit target with these new with the new formula would be 45% of final average salary after 30 years for general service, as opposed to 50 percent of final average salary after 30 years, and then for police and fire it's 45% after 25 years instead of 50%. And the important point I want to make is that the employer contribution, as calculated by Mark Johnson at this point, would be 7.94% of payroll for the employer, and that's versus what would be over 12% right now if for Tier 2. So that represents, in reality, about a 33% savings, which is very significant. And I'll just leave it at that. It's a very significant cut from the Tier 2. There are disability benefits, but we cost them separately at 0.68% of payroll, and there is a minor change in the on-duty and off-duty disability components of that, and workers' comp payments are used as an offset in disability payment calculations, and the current PERS disability standard determines eligibility for the benefit. And then with the defined contribution side of the plan, it's essentially the employee contribution, 6% of salary, mandatory employee contribution, contains the option of the pickup subject to local bargaining. That's how it exists now under PERS as well. the vesting, member contributions are fully vested. Any employer contributions are vested after 5 years of service. Rollovers are allowed from prior employment retirement accounts. So there is portability in this going forward and backwards. And the account will be managed. I think this is a very important point. The account will be managed by the Oregon Investment Council. So the few additional items. One is that there was concern about any proposals for benefit changes and how those were done. I think most of us have reached the conclusion that part of the problem that FERS got itself into was that we piecemealed together over the years benefit changes that ended up making the system unwieldy. And so what we envision in this is having the PERS board appoint a committee similar to MLEC in the workers' comp venue. And that committee would be charged with examining any proposals and reviewing those for the PERS board and making recommendations to the PERS board, who would then make those recommendations to the legislature. Keep in mind that there are very few of these changes that would be contemplated, especially with our experience with PERS. So the other concern was the break in service language would allow up to 12 months of either Family Medical Leave Act leave, related leave, or professional development leave, with the discussion that you have college professors who go on sabbaticals, and so we had to take that into account. And I think I'll leave it at that. Senator Menas added a section 83 in the dash 20s that basically refers to, instructs the PERS system to begin its development of information technology. That has been known for a long time. It's been no secret to anybody in this building for as long as I've been here that PERS has a hell of a mess because of all these individual accounts and so forth. So Senator Menas thought it was very important to put on the record that we get PERS moving in the direction of creating an IT system that will actually be beneficial for the members and give the legislature some ability to understand what they're doing as well. So with that, we'll have our first panel up, please. So welcome, Mr. Treasurer, Margaret Halleck, and Synchronicity. And I guess before you guys start, I want to once again acknowledge the good work of staff here. David Hendricks gets a gold star. This guy has just been working like crazy. He produced this 100-page dash 20s in an incredibly short amount of time. So thanks for his good work, and thanks for the staff here as well. They've done a very good job. So please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Dr. Margaret Halleck. I'm a policy advisor to Governor Kulongoski. And on behalf of the governor, it's my pleasure to testify in support of House Bill 2020, the Oregon Retirement Plan. It is a solid, reasonable, and sustainable pension system to succeed the PERS retirement system for new employees. First, I want to extend our thanks to the legislators who have crafted this plan, both here in the Senate as well as in the House of Representatives. I also want to recognize the public employee unions for their constructive participation. Finally, the employer coalition and the business community also contributed. We are aiming for a consensus plan that for the future pension system, a plan that might not be the first choice of some, but a plan that's reasonable and acceptable. In January of this year, Governor Kulongoski identified reform of the PERS system as a key issue for the legislature and enumerated several standards that he expected reforms to meet. In these standards, and I've attached them to my testimony, the governor requested that we create a new pension system that is sustainable, fair, and accountable. Adopting a successor system with a defined benefit component is the final critical piece of pension reform. The legislature previously accomplished major restructuring of the current system and passed legislation creating a new governing board. The Oregon retirement plan meets the governor's standards for a new system. It has many attractive features, but the bottom line is that it will deliver a fair and adequate pension to our valued public workforce at a reasonable and sustainable cost to the citizens of Oregon. The key elements of the plan that we endorse include the following. First, the plan is fair to public employees. The public workforce is extremely diverse, and any system, any pension system, must be flexible enough to meet these multiple needs. The public workforce includes many career employees in schools, public safety, the justice system, and general government. Other public workers may choose public service for shorter periods, but there are many career employees. So the plan, the Oregon retirement plan, is a hybrid structure that combines the best features of the two leading types of pension programs, defined benefit and defined contribution plans. The defined benefit portion of the plan means that employees will be guaranteed a replacement of their salary, and this is particularly important for career employees who receive about 45% of their salary from the formula part of the plan. The additional defined contribution portion offers flexibility and portability, and it'll function much like a mutual funds program that will be added to the formula benefit. Second, the Oregon retirement plan is financially sound and will cost less than PERS. The two parts of the hybrid plan are financially independent. Employers will pay for the benefit, the formula benefit, and employees contribute to the defined contribution portion. The normal cost is the ongoing cost of the defined benefit or formula part of the plan. And I've attached a letter from Mark Johnson on the normal cost for this plan compared to the Tier 2. And it's slightly different from the way that Senator Corcoran described it, but the bottom line's the same. He shows that the cost of the formula benefit of the proposed plan is estimated at 8.62% of payroll. This is substantially less than the current PERS system. The normal cost of Tier 1 is well over 10%, and the normal cost of the Tier 2 is 9.82% for the employer. And the recent legislation, House Bill 2003, actually increases the cost to the employer of the Tier 2 because it separates out the employee contribution to the formula. Therefore, if House Bill 2003 is upheld, the cost to employers of Tier 2 formula will be 12.47%. Thus, the savings of the Oregon retirement plan are substantial, up to 4 points of payroll for employers and the public, compared to what we estimate the current cost of Tier 2. The proposed formula plan is a plain vanilla defined benefit plan at a lower salary replacement rate with higher retirement ages and without many of the bells and whistles of PERS. And these are the reasons for the savings. Finally, the Oregon retirement plan is sustainable. The hybrid plan eliminates the structural features of PERS that led to escalating costs. For example, it does not include money match, guaranteed annual interest returns, or buyout of unused sick leave. Compared to PERS, there are many fewer decisions that will be made by the board or others that will increase benefits and therefore costs. The formula is lower, and therefore the risk of escalating unfunded liability is also proportionately reduced. We are confident that, and the actuary told me yesterday that he is confident the proposed plan will be sustainable over time. The proposal includes a procedure to review proposed changes to the design of the plan before they're considered by the legislature. The idea is to have the new PERS board review all proposals for changes and make recommendations to the legislature after consulting with stakeholders. This process will give legislators additional information before changes are made that could potentially drive the cost of the system higher. Compared to PERS, there are far fewer cost drivers and therefore opportunities for costs to escalate in the system. In sum, the governor urges you to adopt the Oregon retirement plan as a successor system for PERS. It is the last element in PERS reform, and it is critical to the political and financial viability of the system. This is a fair plan, a reasonable plan that is predictable and sustainable. It meets the governor's standards, and we urge you to adopt it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Doctor. Well, thank you for coming up, Representative McPherson. I just want to thank you again for your incredible work on this. I think most of the people in the building know what your responsibility was in this, and I'm convinced that we couldn't have done it without you, and I think that your solution to trying to get to a solution for the next group of employees was elegant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could emphasize a couple of aspects of the Dash 20 amendments. First, for the record, I am Representative Greg McPherson from House District 38 and served on the House PERS Committee. And I think it's important to note that the Dash 20 amendments reflect a compromise plan that is a compromise really on two levels. The process that was pursued in the House Committee was to ask labor and management to work together to arrive at a design of a successor plan, and they made substantial progress in that direction, working with a defined benefit plan model. Ultimately, the House PERS Committee and the House as a whole chose to move a pure defined contribution plan, and so this proposal that you have before you is really a middle ground between those two approaches. That is, it combines a defined benefit plan element with a defined contribution element, so it draws on both sources. And then, with respect to the work that labor and management had put into the process, they had made substantial progress on many aspects of the design of a successor plan, but there were still some elements on which they were not yet together, and this plan brings those elements together. That is, works through a level of defined benefit pension that is affordable and sustainable over time, and that reduces the risk that the employers have in a system where they're underwriting the level of guaranteed benefit by shifting a substantial portion of the benefit out into a side defined contribution plan. So I think that it is a good design to accomplish what we need to for the next generation of public employees in Oregon. This is our opportunity to get it right, having learned from their experience with the PERS system where the pitfalls are. I can provide input on any technical issues that you may have about the design of the plan and the text of the amendment.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Treasurer. Chair. For the record, my name is Randall Edwards, State Treasurer of Oregon, and I appreciate the opportunity to join this panel to just highlight what I think is the underpinning of this entire bill and the Dash 20 amendments, and that is the power of the PERS fund, which is something I think in the debate over PERS reform, whether it was the current legislation that you've passed or this hybrid, you're looking at the underpinnings of the power of the PERS fund to provide the engine to achieve the policy goals that were just spelled out. And we worked very closely with your staff and others in this room to make sure that we could manage and invest in a way to keep the power of that fund intact. And the advantages I want to just talk about are really three for you. When you look at the pension fund as a whole, it's nearly $34 billion today, and hopefully it continues to grow. This has been a challenging couple of years to find return. But one of the things is historically the strong returns of this fund are really one that we all should be very proud of. And it's one in which when you go back and look as far as 1975, we're well above what the actuarial view of what we needed to return. It was almost 12% for that long on average on that period of time. So we have a long track record of providing returns. And I want to give credit where credit's due. This was really a vision of then Treasurer Straub, who wanted to take and modernize this pension fund to provide benefits, a better benefit to public employees, and in doing so, diversified the portfolio and started to invest in stocks, real estate, and others, in which today we're seeing as a leader in the marketplace. That's number one, strong returns that will continue. We expect those to continue and will provide the underpinning for this new system. Number two, it's professionally managed. The way we work is we hire the private sector to manage these monies. We, as an institutional investor, have shown the ability to access the marketplace at the lowest cost. And again, I think that's something that is a very powerful part of the current system, and the adoption of the Dash 20 would be maintained and sustained. Things that we can achieve with investors, the cost of those investments much lower than an individual could achieve or attain, as well as the expertise. And I want to underscore, we go out and try to find the best to manage money in the various asset categories that we have to ensure that we're meeting the objectives that have been spelled out with the PERS to meet these PERS beneficiaries. And in fact, Oregon's done such a great job in how we manage our monies, our reputation in the marketplace. We get access to new ideas, looking at opportunities that as an individual you cannot attain. So looking at the Dash 20s, both in the defined benefit portion and in the defined contribution portion, you're taking all of those advantages that this fund has offered the state employers, employees, the opportunity to continue that advantage. And I think that is what both the previous speakers got to, was these are the things that you will continue to preserve, which in my mind is why you want to, if you're moving this plan forward, you keep the power of a defined benefit, which again, we're keeping those tenants in this new program. So I'm here to just support the notion that this PERS fund and the way we've managed the money long-term, short-term, will continue to be a benefit to the state of Oregon under the Dash 20.
Thank you very much. Any questions of the panel? No. Thank you, folks.
Great.
Now I have the PERS Coalition representative, please. I think it might be Beth Ann. I'm not sure who's...
Good afternoon, Senator Corcoran, members of the committee. My name is Beth Ann Darby, and I'm with the Oregon Education Association. Today I'm here to speak on behalf of the PERS Coalition, which is the labor unions that represent members of the PERS system and the new successor system. We started out at the beginning of the session, and maybe even before that, really pushing hard on a defined benefit plan. We felt that that was the type of plan that would provide the most stability over the long run for our membership. We've come to understand that that was not a doable proposition in this environment. We understood better some of the employer concerns about cost sharing. And we are... As a coalition, we are either neutral or supportive of this plan, other than OSEA, which has taken a position against any sort of hybrid proposal. But we feel that this new plan provides a very good baseline benefit for our members, and we really appreciate all the hard work to try and meet the concerns we brought forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Seeing none. Okay. Thank you. Mr. Salzgiver and Mr. Green, while they're coming up, as you can see, this was not a typical bargaining situation by any stretch. I mean, it was not a two-party negotiation. It was multiple folks on, we probably had about a six-sided table on this to try to reach consensus. So, go ahead, gentlemen. Well, thank you. Any questions or witnesses?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Jim Green representing the Oregon School Boards Association, and here also representing the PERS Employer Coalition, which consists of the League of Oregon Cities, the Association of Oregon Counties, Oregon School Boards Association, and Special Districts. I want to thank the chair and this committee and the chair of the House PERS Committee for the work that you've done thus far this session on reforming the PERS system that we know. We have had dramatic issues in PERS, and we want to thank you for all your hard work. We want to thank Representative McPherson, who has done a yeoman's job on drafting what we believe to be an adequate replacement plan for the current PERS system for new hires. There are things in this draft for everyone to like, and there's things in it for everyone to hate. And when I was a kid growing up, my grandfather said, well, then you've got a pretty good deal. And I think that's what we've got here. This is a system that we're designing today to create a retirement benefit for folks 30, 40, and 50 years out. There's a problem with that because the system we've been dealing with, we all know the pitfalls and problems. And you're trying to address pitfalls and problems of the current system, but you're trying to look 30 and 40 and 50 years out. And that's part of the problem with designing a system, and I think we've done a pretty good job in the Dash A20s of addressing the issues as we know them today and trying to look 20, 30, 40, 50 years out. Public employers had three major issues going into a successor system, and I don't think it's a secret to anyone. I've shared them with everyone in the building. Using overtime in trying to figure out what a final average salary was. In the negotiations, we've worked out that that'll go to the PERS board, and they will develop that through rule. That's the new PERS board, the new five-member board that will be coming on in September. I think it will be the first test of that board to find out how they're going to handle the public employee retirement system that they're addressed to handle. The issue of disability. This was a big one, especially non-duty related disability issues. We met yesterday with Mark Johnson, the actuary for PERS. He ran us through the numbers and convinced us that the cost savings that we were trying to get in disability weren't there. We believe the numbers because trying to go outside of the retirement system to get a disability plan is probably going to be more costly for local employers. We realize that, and we're willing to go with the disability plan that's currently in the bill before you. Finally, one issue that I think everybody's trying to design a plan around is on the issue of benefit creep, add-ons to the benefits, which is part of the problem we've had with the current or the previous PERS system prior to reforms. And I think Representative McPherson's idea originally of having local employers sign off on it, obviously, representing local employers, we would have liked that. We understand it's a give-and-take process. We like the process of having a committee similar to the MLAC one for workers' compensation being set up, advising the board, and the board advising the legislature. I think the A20 amendments are the best package that we're going to see come forward this session to reform a system for new hires out there, and we are supportive of the bill as it currently stands.
Thank you very
much. Happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Salzgiver.
Chair Corcoran, members of the committee, for the record, Mike Salzgiver with the Portland Business Alliance. We represent over 1,600 members in the greater Portland metropolitan area. We appreciate the opportunity to provide our thoughts on the work being done with respect to the amendments to HB 2020. Last fall, when the Alliance adopted its legislative objectives for the 2003 session, fixing PERS was the first item on our list of actions that we felt needed to happen to restore Oregon to fiscal health. Mr. Chairman, I want to echo Mr. Green's comments. We want to thank you in particular, your colleagues on this committee, the tremendous work that Mr. McPherson and his colleagues in the House have done, the work that the Governor's Office has done, tireless work in trying to craft solutions to this problem, and that have already yielded, we think, significant savings to the taxpayers. In our view, HB 2003 and 2004 represented significant steps forward in resolving the problems created by PERS. We know the decisions made in creating those laws were not easy for anyone in the legislature, but given the fiscal crisis faced by Oregonians, these new laws will yield immediate and significant savings for taxpayers for many years to come. Getting that work done was the right thing to do, and so we applaud it. As we look ahead to a successor system, I want to say at the outset that our goal is to replace the current system entirely. We do not believe that leaving a Tier 2 system or anything like it in place is acceptable. The ongoing cost pressures imposed by PERS and particularly the Tier 2 system on the state and on the taxpayers have got to be fixed. It has been the position of the Portland Business Alliance that we must put into place a system that is structurally sound, that provides predictability for budgeting purposes by controlling the benefit creep that Jim was referring to, and which actually saves real taxpayer dollars. It's our view, very candidly, that a defined contribution plan met all of those goals, and that type of plan is, very candidly, the Alliance's preferred choice. However, we do not believe in sacrificing the achievable on the altar of the perfect. We have reviewed, and we continue to review, the redraft of 2020. And taken together with the earlier work on 2003 and 2004, we believe the hybrid system suggested in the -A20 amendments reflects a framework of a successor plan that we can work with. So in the next few days, as we move toward a work session on this bill, we will continue discussions with you and your colleagues, which we hope will further strengthen the bill's financial controls, which we strongly believe are necessary for maintaining the long-term fiscal health of the state. But if there's anything that the business community has learned in the past 18 months, we have learned that we are in the Oregon retirement planning process to stay. We are fully aware that we must remain vigilant in watching the work of the new retirement board and the legislative process with respect to the implementation of the new laws and in the plan's future management. So, Mr. Chairman, with that, I again want to thank you for all your hard work and the difficult choices that you have made, and we look forward to working with you to bring this issue to a successful conclusion at the earliest possible time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions, Mrs. Salzgiver?
Just a comment, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Mr. Salzgiver, I have to tell you, I really like your quote, and I wrote it down, and I'm going to keep it. I don't believe in sacrificing the achievable on the altar of the perfect. It's one of the more brilliant quotes I've heard in a while, because in this process, some people forget that. And I just want to thank you for having that vision, because we weren't going to get where you wanted to go, and we weren't going to get where others wanted to go, and we had to meet in the middle. And I think this is really a fine achievement on everyone's part. And thank you for that vision.
Chair Corcoran, Senator Walker, you can certainly use that quote however you wish. My colleagues are sick of hearing it. So.
That's when you start attributing it to somebody else.
Yeah, I think it was the Greeks. So
I think it was Marla Ray or something. Senator Starr?
Thank you. Question I have is for Jim. The number of public employers that currently have a 6% pickup in their contracts, and I assume will carry that forward for new hires, those numbers don't show up in the numbers that you've provided me in my office earlier today. Can you talk about, do you have a round number of the number of percentages? I think that's how to play into this discussion.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Starr, I don't have round numbers for all local employers, but I can tell you what school districts do. The last time I checked with our human resource development staff, which is our bargaining staff at the table, currently about 60% of the school districts pick up the 6% for their employees. That number is dropping, though, because it's a cost for school districts, and as resources have gotten tighter, their highest driving cost in school districts relate to personnel. They're looking at working with their employee associations, trying to bargain other things in and out of contracts. One of the things they're looking at bargaining out is doing the pickup, because it is a cost. That number was at 65% when we started the session. It drops to 60. Ron Wilson, our Director of Human Resource Development, has told me that it's on the table in every contract that's currently open. I can't tell you how those are playing out. That's with school districts. You could probably talk to Maria Keltner as to how that may play out for the League of Oregon Cities and the Association of Oregon Counties, and Hasina Squires may be able to help you with the Special Districts Association. But for school districts, the number's currently about 60% of districts pick that up. And I think your point there, Senator, is beyond the numbers that you have from Mark Johnson for the normal cost rate of about 8.62 is the addition of the 6%. And that's something that local school district boards are going to have to be very vigilant about if they're going to control cost and expenditures in their school districts, because we are very reliant on our personnel in our school district. That's going to be an individual choice for each one of those school district boards in our 198 school districts. If they have the ability to pick it up and that's something they bargained, there may be a trade in the language in a contract that they believe they've gotten better language in order to pick that up. They may have traded other things. That's the nature of the beast in collective bargaining. But currently about 60% of our districts do that.
Okay, thank you. One other question.
Mm-hmm. Senator Starr?
The role of the cost of living adjustments as it relates to, again, to the numbers that are on here, and how does that play into the added cost to the employers?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Starr, my understanding in talking with the actuary yesterday, Mark Johnson, the PERS actuary, it's a little bit different cost of living adjustment than what we currently have in the current PERS system. In the current PERS system, and you might want to talk to Steve Delaney or Jim Voitko about this, it's a banking COLA, which means it continues to add on to cost. This one is my understanding in talking with Representative McPherson and with the actuary, it's not a banking COLA, so that it doesn't have escalating costs that are associated with the banking of the COLA. Now, the technical aspects of banking COLA, I think you want to probably ask Mr. Voitko or Mr. Delaney about that. But that the cost ramifications of the COLA that are part of either the retirement benefit, the disability benefit, a death benefit that's included in this plan, don't have the cost ramifications that are in the current system, is my understanding.
Okay, but those numbers are not are not reflected in these?
I believe in the normal cost rate, Mr. Chairman, Senator Starr, I believe in the normal cost rate and in the rate that goes across there for disability, that the actuary did include that in the cost associated with normal cost rate.
Dr. Hallock's again.
I think they did. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Okay, we will close the public hearing on 2020, and we'll open the work session on House Bill 2020.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Starr.
Was there anyone else that wanted to testify?
It was by invitation only. Did you have someone you'd like to testify?
Well, I just didn't know if there's anybody else in the audience. That this is a pretty significant piece of legislative business. There might be citizens or other folks in the building in the audience that should testify.
Well, is there anybody that wants to testify? No. Gee, what a surprise. All right. Well, open the public hearing for brief testimony, please, on 2020.
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Russ Walker. I represent Citizens for Sound Economy. We have over 12,000 members here in the state of Oregon, and we are a membership organization made up of average citizens around the state. I just want to briefly testify. We were supportive of 2020 when it was a DC, when it had a, we consider cost controls in place, a 6%. And a 7.15% cost to the taxpayers of the state of Oregon. We believe that DC is a system that is sustainable and fair. We are concerned about a number of different elements of this plan. We're concerned about the creep. We think that's potentially the biggest problem with the plan. We believe it's a drastic improvement over most of what we've seen thus far this session, and we compliment the members of the committee for getting it as far as they've gotten it. We are concerned about the 6% pickup. We know that's part of collective bargaining, but we'd like to see some stronger language, maybe limiting the 6% pickup at the end of this current cycle of agreements of contracts. We have concerns about the COLA as well. And quite frankly, we haven't had an opportunity to properly examine the entire plan to see if there's other problems with it. We'd like a little more time to do that. And considering the role we played in the original drafting of 2020, we haven't had any role in the drafting of this version or even in negotiations in this version. So we would appreciate the opportunity to be able to look at it further before any movements made on this bill. We stand opposed to the bill as it sits thus far as we've been able to look at it. We think it once again violates the trust that the taxpayers of the state of Oregon have placed in U.S. legislators. We think it falls far short of being fiscally responsible. And quite frankly, we think the cost of somewhere between 8.6% and 15% of payroll is excessive. And it's difficult to justify to average taxpayers when their pensions and their private 401ks range between 3.5 and 5% of their payroll. And that's generally accepted amongst the private sector. And those are our concerns. And I'll take any questions.
Any questions? Close the public hearing. Thank you. Open the work session. House Bill 2020. Senator Minnis.
Move the
A20 amendments to House Bill 2020. Senator Minnis moves the A20 amendments to House Bill 2020. Any discussion? Ms. Gravel, will you call the roll, please?
Senator Starr?
No.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Senator Minnis?
Aye.
Senator Cormier?
No.
Chair Colquitt? Aye. The dash 20s are moved into House Bill 2020. We're going to close the work session now, and we're going to hold on to the bill. The plan right now is to probably hold on to it till Monday afternoon, and we'll reconvene in a work session. And with that, we will close the hearing, and we're adjourned.